Iraqi regime. Token gestures are not acceptable. The only acceptable outcome is the one already defined by a unanimous vote of the Security Council. Total disarmament. Great Britain, Spain, and the United States have introduced a new resolution stating that Iraq has failed to meet the requirements of Resolution 1441. Saddam Hussein is not disarming. This is a fact. It cannot be denied. Saddam Hussein has a long history of reckless aggression and terrible crimes. He possesses weapons of terror. He provides funding and training and safe haven to terrorists. Terrorists who would willingly use weapons of mass destruction against America and other peace-loving countries. Saddam Hussein and his weapons are a direct threat to this country, to our people, and to all free people. If the world fails to confront the threat posed by the Iraqi regime, refusing to use force, even as a last resort, free nations would assume immense and unacceptable risks. The attacks of September the 11th, 2001, showed what the enemies of America did with four airplanes. We will not wait to see what terrorists or terrorist states could do with weapons of mass destruction. We are determined to confront threats wherever they arise. I will not leave the American people at the mercy of the Iraqi dictator and his weapons. In the event of conflict, America also accepts our responsibility to protect innocent lives in every way possible. We will bring food and medicine to the Iraqi people. We will help that nation to build a just government after decades of brutal dictatorship. The form and leadership of that government is for the Iraqi people to choose. Anything they choose will be better than the misery and torture and murder they have known under Saddam Hussein. Across the world and in every part of America, people of goodwill are hoping and praying for peace. Our goal is peace for our nation, for our friends and allies, for the people of the Middle East. People of goodwill must also recognize that allowing a dangerous dictator to defy the world and harbor weapons of mass murder and terror is not peace at all. It is pretense. The cause of peace will be advanced only when the terrorists lose a wealthy patron and protector, and when the dictator is fully and finally disarmed. Tonight, I thank the men and women of our armed services and their families. I know their deployment so far from home is causing hardship for many military families. Our nation is deeply grateful to all who serve in uniform. We appreciate your commitment, your idealism, and your sacrifice. We support you. And we know that if peace must be defended, you are ready. Ron Fournier.
Let me see if I can further, if you could further define what you just called this important moment we're in, since you've made it clear just now that you don't think Saddam has disarmed, and we have a quarter million troops in the Persian Gulf, and now that you've called on the world to be ready to use force as a last resort. Are we just days away from the point at which you decide whether or not we go to war? And what harm would it do to give Saddam a final ultimatum, a 2 or 3 day deadline to disarm or face force?
Well, we're still in the final stages of diplomacy. I'm spending a lot of time on the phone talking to fellow leaders about the need for the United Nations Security Council to state the facts, which is Saddam Hussein hasn't disarmed. 1441, the Security Council resolution passed unanimously last fall, said clearly that Saddam Hussein has one last chance to disarm. He hasn't disarmed. And so we're working with Security Council members to resolve this issue at the Security Council. This is not only an important moment for the security of our nation, I believe it's an important moment for the Security Council itself. And the reason I say that is because this issue has been before the Security Council, the issue of disarmament of Iraq, for 12 long years. And the fundamental question facing the Security Council is, will its words mean anything? When the Security Council speaks, will the words have merit and weight? I think it's important for those words to have merit and weight, because I understand that in order to win the war against terror, there must be a united effort to do so. We must work together to defeat terror. Iraq is a part of the war on terror. Iraq is a country that has got terrorist ties. It's a country with wealth. It's a country that trains terrorists, a country that can arm terrorists. And our fellow Americans must understand in this new war against terror that we not only must chase down al-Qaeda terrorists, we must deal with weapons of mass destruction as well. That's what the United Nations Security Council has been talking about for 12 long years. It's now time for this issue to come to a head at the Security Council, and it will. As far as ultimatums and all the speculation about where, what may or may not happen after next week, we'll just wait and see. Steve? Well, we're days away from resolving this issue at the Security Council.
Thank you. Another hot spot is North Korea. If North Korea restarts their plutonium plant, will that change your thinking about how to handle this crisis, or are you resigned to North Korea becoming a nuclear power?
This is a regional issue. I say a regional issue because there's a lot of countries that have got a direct stake into whether or not North Korea has nuclear weapons. We've got a stake as to whether North Korea has a nuclear weapon. China clearly has a stake as to whether or not North Korea has a nuclear weapon. South Korea, of course, has a stake. Japan has got a significant stake as to whether or not North Korea has a nuclear weapon. Russia has a stake. So therefore, I think the best way to deal with this is in multilateral fashion by convincing those nations that they must stand up to their responsibility, along with the United States, to convince Kim Jong-il that the development of a nuclear arsenal is not in his nation's interest, and that should he want help in easing the suffering of the North Korean people, the best way to achieve that help is to not proceed forward. We've tried bilateral negotiations with North Korea. My predecessor, in a good faith effort, entered into a framework agreement. The United States honored its side of the agreement. North Korea didn't. While we felt the agreement was enforced, North Korea was enriching uranium. In my judgment, the best way to deal with North Korea is to convince parties to assume their responsibility. I was heartened by the fact that Jiang Zemin, when he came to Crawford, Texas, made it very clear to me and publicly as well that a nuclear weapons-free peninsula was in China's interest. And so we're working with China and the other nations I mentioned to bring a multilateral pressure and to convince Kim Jong-il that the development of a nuclear arsenal is not in his interests. Dick.
Mr. President, You have, and your top advisors, notably Secretary of State Powell, have repeatedly said that we have shared with our allies all the current up-to-date intelligence information that proves the imminence of the threat we face from Saddam Hussein, and that they have been sharing their intelligence with us as well. If all these nations, all of them are normal allies, have access to the same intelligence information, why is it that they are reluctant to think that the threat is so real, so imminent, that we need to move to the brink of war now? And in relation to that, today, the British Foreign Minister, Jack Straw, suggested at the UN that it might be time to look at amending the resolution, perhaps with an eye towards a timetable like that proposed by the Canadians some 2 weeks ago that would set a firm deadline to give Saddam Hussein a little bit of time to come clean. And also, obviously, that would give you a little bit of a chance to build more support within members of the Security Council. Is that something that the government should be pursuing at the UN right now?
We, of course, are consulting with our allies at the United Nations. But I meant what I said. This is the last phase of diplomacy. A little bit more time. Saddam Hussein has had 12 years to disarm. He is deceiving people. That's what's important for our fellow citizens to realize, that if he really intended to disarm like the world has asked him to do, we would know whether he was disarming. He's trying to buy time. I can understand why he's been successful with these tactics for 12 years. Saddam Hussein is a threat to our nation. September the 11th changed the strategic thinking, at least as far as I was concerned, for how to protect our country. My job is to protect the American people. It used to be that we could think that you could contain a person like Saddam Hussein, that oceans would protect us from his type of terror. September the 11th should say to the American people that we're now a battlefield, that weapons of mass destruction in the hands of a terrorist organization could be deployed here at home. And so therefore, I think the threat is real. And so do a lot of other people in my government. And since I believe the threat is real, and since my most important job is to protect the security of the American people, that's precisely what we'll do. Our demands are that Saddam Hussein disarm. We hope he does. We have worked with the international community to convince him to disarm. If he doesn't disarm, we'll disarm him. You asked about sharing of intelligence, and I appreciate that, because we do share a lot of intelligence with nations which may or may not agree with us in the Security Council as to how to deal with Saddam Hussein and his threats. We have got roughly 90 countries engaged in Operation Enduring Freedom, chasing down the terrorists. We do communicate a lot, and we will continue to communicate a lot. We must communicate. We must share intelligence. We must cut off money together. We must smoke these al-Qaeda types out one at a time. It's in our national interest as well that we deal with Saddam Hussein. But America is not alone in this sentiment. There are a lot of countries who fully understand the threat of Saddam Hussein. A lot of countries realize that the credibility of the Security Council is at stake. A lot of countries, like America, who hope that he would have disarmed, and a lot of countries which realize that it may require force to disarm him. Jim Angle.
Sir, if you haven't already made the choice to go to war, can you tell us what you're waiting to hear or see before you do make that decision? And if I may, during the recent demonstrations, many of the protesters suggested that the U.S. was a threat to peace, which prompted you to wonder out loud why they didn't see Saddam Hussein as a threat to peace. I wonder why you think so many people around the world take a different view of the threat that Saddam Hussein poses than you and your allies.
Well, first, I You know, I appreciate societies in which people can express their opinion. That society, free speech, stands in stark contrast to Iraq. We went to the Security Council to get another resolution called 1441, which was unanimously approved by the Security Council, demanding that Saddam Hussein disarm. I'm hopeful that he does disarm. But in the name of peace and the security of our people, if he won't do so voluntarily, we will disarm him, and other nations will join him, join us in disarming him. And that creates a certain sense of anxiety. I understand that. Nobody likes war. The only thing I can do is assure the loved ones of those who wear our uniform that if we have to go to war, if war is upon us because Saddam Hussein has made that choice, we will have the best equipment available for our troops, the best plan available for victory, and we will respect innocent life in Iraq. The risk of doing nothing, the risk of hoping that Saddam Hussein changes his mind and becomes a gentle soul, the risk that somehow that inaction will make the world safer is a risk I'm not willing to take for the American people. You'll be there in a minute. King, John King. This is a scripted.
Thank you, Mr. President. How would you answer your critics who say that they think this is somehow personal? As Senator Kennedy put it tonight, he said your fixation with Saddam Hussein is making the world a more dangerous place. And as you prepare the American people for the possibility of military conflict, could you share with us any of the scenarios your advisors have shared with you about worst-case scenarios in terms of the potential cost of American lives, the potential cost to the American economy, and the potential risks of retaliatory terrorist strikes here at home?
My job is to protect America, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. People can ascribe all kinds of intentions. I swore to protect and defend the Constitution. That's what I swore to do. Put my hand on the Bible and took that oath, and that's exactly what I am going to do. I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I believe he's a threat to the neighborhood in which he lives. And I've got good evidence to believe that. He has weapons of mass destruction, and he has used weapons of mass destruction in his neighborhood and on his own people. He's invaded countries in his neighborhood. He tortures his own people. He's a murderer. He has trained and financed al-Qaeda-type organizations before, al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. I take the threat seriously, and I'll deal with the threat. I hope it can be done peacefully. The rest of your six-point questions?
The potential price in terms of lives and the economy, terrorism?
The price of doing nothing exceeds the price of taking action if we have to. We will do everything we can to minimize the loss of life. The price of the attacks on America, the cost of the attacks on America on September the 11th were enormous. They were significant. And I am not willing to take that chance again, John. Terry Moran.
Thank you, sir. May I follow up on Jim Engel's question? In the past several weeks, your policy on Iraq has generated opposition from the governments of France, Russia, China, Germany, Turkey, the Arab League, and many other countries, opened a rift at NATO and at the UN, and drawn millions of ordinary citizens around the world into the streets in anti-war protests. May I ask, what went wrong that so many governments and peoples around the world now not only disagree with you very strongly, but see the U.S. under your leadership as an arrogant power?
I think if you remember back prior to the resolution coming out of the United Nations last fall, I suspect you might have asked a question along those lines. How come you can't get anybody to support your resolution? If I remember correctly, there was a lot of doubt as to whether or not we were even going to get any votes, which we would get our own, of course. And the vote came out 15 to nothing, Terry. And I think you'll see when it's all said and done, if we have to use force, a lot of nations will be with us. You clearly named some that France and Germany expressed their opinions. We have a disagreement over how best to deal with Saddam Hussein. I understand that. Having said that, they're still our friends, and we will deal with them as friends. We've got a lot of common interests. Our transatlantic relationships are very important. While they may disagree with how we deal with Saddam Hussein and his weapons of mass destruction, there's no disagreement when it came time to vote on 1441, at least as far as France was concerned. They joined us. They said Saddam Hussein has one last chance of disarming. If they think more time will cause him to disarm, I disagree with that. He's a master at deception. He has no intention of disarming. Otherwise, we would have known. There's a lot of talk about inspectors. Really would have taken a handful of inspectors to determine whether he was disarming. They could have showed up at a parking lot, and he could have brought his weapons and destroyed them. That's not what he chose to do. Secondly, I make my decisions based upon the oath I took, the one I just described to you. I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. He's a threat to people in his neighborhood. He's also a threat to the Iraqi people. One of the things we love in America is freedom. If I may, I'd like to remind you what I said at the State of the Union. Liberty is not America's gift to the world. It is God's gift to each and every person. And that's what I believe. I believe that when we see totalitarianism, that we must deal with it. We don't have to do it always militarily. But this is a unique circumstance because of 12 years of denial and defiance, because of terrorist connections, because of past history. I'm convinced that a liberated Iraq will be important for that troubled part of the world. The Iraqi people are plenty capable of governing themselves. Iraq's a sophisticated society. Iraq's got money. Iraq will provide a place where people can see that the Shia and the Sunni and the Kurds can get along in a federation. Iraq will serve as a catalyst for change, positive change. So there's a lot more at stake than just American security and the security of people close by Saddam Hussein. Freedom is at stake as well, and I take that very seriously. Gregory.
President, good evening. If you order war, can any military operation be considered a success if the United States does not capture Saddam Hussein, as you once said, dead or alive?
Well, I hope we don't have to go to war. But if we go to war, we will disarm Iraq. And if we go to war, there will be a regime change. And replacing this cancer inside of Iraq will be a government that represents the rights of all the people, a government which represents the voices of the Shia and the Sunni and the Kurds. We care about the suffering of the Iraqi people. I mentioned in my opening comments that there's a lot of food ready to go in. There's something like 55,000 oil for food distribution points in Iraq. We know where they are. We fully intend to make sure that they've got ample food. We know where their hospitals are. We want to make sure they got ample medical supplies. The life of the Iraqi citizen is going to dramatically improve.
Is success contingent upon capturing or killing Saddam Hussein in your mind?
We will be changing the regime of Iraq for the good of the Iraqi people. Bill Plant.
Mr. President, to a lot of people, it seems that war is probably inevitable because many people doubt, most people I would guess, that Saddam Hussein will ever do what we are demanding that he do, which is disarm. And if war is inevitable, there are a lot of people in this country, as much as half by polling standards, who agree that he should be disarmed, who listen to you say that you have the evidence, but who feel they haven't seen it, and who still wonder why blood has to be shed if he hasn't attacked us.
Well, Bill, if they believe he should be disarmed, and he's not going to disarm, there's only one way to disarm him. And that happens to be my last choice, the use of force. Secondly, the American people know that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. By the way, he declared he didn't have any. 1441 insisted that he have a complete declaration of his weapons. He said he didn't have any weapons. Secondly, he's used these weapons before. I mean, this is, we're not speculating about the nature of the man. We know the nature of the man. Colin Powell, in an eloquent address to the United Nations, described some of the information we were at liberty of talking about. He mentioned a man named Al-Zarqawi, who is in charge of the poison network. It's a man who was wounded in Afghanistan, received aid in Baghdad, ordered the killing of a U.S. citizen, USAID employee, was harbored in Iraq. There is a poison plant in northeast Iraq. To assume that Saddam Hussein knew none of this was going on is not to really understand the nature of the Iraqi society. There's a lot of facts which make it clear to me and many others that Saddam is a threat, and we're not going to wait until he does attack. We're not going to hope that he changes his attitude. We're not going to assume that, you know, he's a different kind of person than he has been. So in the name of security and peace, if we have to, we'll disarm him. I hope he disarms, or perhaps I hope he leaves the country. I hear a lot of talk from different nations around where Saddam Hussein, you know, might be exiled. That would be fine with me, just so long as Iraq disarms after he's exiled. Let's see here. Elizabeth.
Thank you, Mr. President. As you said, the Security Council faces a vote next week on a resolution implicitly authorizing an attack on Iraq. Will you call for a vote on that resolution, even if you aren't sure you have the vote?
Yes. Well, first, I don't think it basically says that he's in defiance of 1441. That's what the resolution says. And it's hard to believe anybody saying he isn't in defiance of 1441, because 1441 said he must disarm. And yes, we'll call for a vote. No matter what the whip count is, we're calling for the vote. We want to see people stand up and say what their opinion is about Saddam Hussein and the utility of the United Nations Security Council. And so, you bet. It's time for people to show their cards, to let the world know where they stand when it comes to Saddam. Mark Noller.
Mr. President, are you worried that the United States might be viewed as defiant of the United Nations if you went ahead with military action without specific and explicit authorization from the UN?
No. I'm not worried about that. As a matter of fact, it's hard to say the United States is defiant about the United Nations when I was the person that took the issue to the United Nations September the 12th, 2002. We've been working with the United Nations. We've been working through the United Nations. Secondly, I'm confident the American people understand that when it comes to our security, if we need to act, we will act, and we really don't need United Nations approval to do so. I want the United Nations to be effective. It's important for it to be a robust, capable body. It's important for its words to mean what they say, and as we head into the 21st century, Mark, when it comes to our security, we really don't need anybody's permission. Bill.
Thank you, Mr. President. Even though our military can certainly prevail without a northern front, isn't Turkey making it at least slightly more challenging for us and therefore at least slightly more likely that American lives will be lost? And if they don't reverse course, would you stop backing their entry into the European Union?
The answer to your second question is I support Turkey going into the EU. Turkey's a friend. They're a NATO ally. We will continue to work with Turkey. We've got contingencies in place that should our troops not come through Turkey, not be allowed to come through Turkey. And no, that won't cause any more hardship for our troops. I'm confident of that. April, did you have a question or did I call upon you cold?
I have a question.
Okay. I'm sure you do have a question.
Mr. President, as the nation is at odds over war with many organizations like the Congressional Black Caucus pushing for continued diplomacy through the UN, how is your faith guiding you? And what should you tell America, well, what should America do collectively as you instructed before 9/11? Should it be pray? Because you're saying, let's continue the war on terror. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that question a lot. First, for those who urge more diplomacy, I would simply say that diplomacy hasn't worked. We've tried diplomacy for 12 years. Saddam Hussein hasn't disarmed, he's armed. And we live in a dangerous world. We live in new circumstances in our country, and I hope people remember I know they remember the tragedy of September the 11th, but I hope they understand the lesson of September the 11th. The lesson is that we're vulnerable to attack wherever it may occur, and we must take threats which gather overseas very seriously. We don't have to deal with them all militarily, but we must deal with them. And in the case of Iraq, it is now time for him to disarm for the sake of peace. If we have to use our troops, we will. My faith sustains me because I pray daily. I pray for guidance and wisdom and strength. If we were to commit our troops, I would pray for their safety. And I would pray for the safety of innocent Iraqi lives as well. One thing that's really great about our country, April, is there are thousands of people who pray for me, who I'll never see, be able to thank. But it's a humbling experience to think that people I will never have met have lifted me and my family up in prayer. And for that, I'm grateful. It's been a comforting feeling to know that is true. I pray for peace, April. I pray for peace. Hutch.
As you know, not everyone shares your optimistic vision of how this might play out. Do you ever worry, maybe in the wee small hours, that you might be wrong and they might be right in thinking that this could lead to more terrorism, more anti-American sentiment, more instability in the Middle East? Mm.
Hutch, I think, first of all, and we don't want anybody in harm's way. You shouldn't be in harm's way. The journalists who are there should leave. If you're going and we start action, leave. The inspectors, we don't want people in harm's way. And our intention, we have no quarrel with anybody other than Saddam and his group of killers who have destroyed a society. And we will do everything we can, as I mentioned, and I mean this, to protect innocent life. I've not made up our mind about military action. Hopefully this can be done peacefully. Hopefully that as a result of the pressure that we have placed and others have placed, that Saddam will disarm and or leave the country. Ed.
President, good evening. Sir, you've talked a lot about trusting the American people when it comes to making decisions about their own lives, about how to spend their own money. When it comes to the financial cost of the war, sir, it would seem that the administration surely has costed out various scenarios. If that's the case, why not present some of them to the American people so they know what to expect, sir?
Ed, we will. We'll present it in the form of a supplemental to the spenders. We don't get to spend the money, as you know. We have to request the expenditure money from the Congress. And at the appropriate time, we'll request a supplemental. We're obviously analyzing all aspects. We hope we don't go to war, but if we should, we will present a supplemental. But I want to remind you what I said before. There is a huge cost when we get attacked. There is a significant cost to our society. First of all, there is the cost of lives. It's an immeasurable cost. 3,000 people died. Significant cost to our economy. Opportunity loss is an immeasurable cost, besides the cost of repairing buildings and cost to our airlines. So the cost of an attack is significant. If I thought we were safe from attack, I would be thinking differently. But I see a gathering threat. I mean, it's a true, real threat to America, and therefore we will deal with it. And at the appropriate time, Ed, we will ask for a supplemental, and that'll be the moment where you and others will be able to recognize what we think the dollar cost of a conflict will be. You know, the benefits of such an effort, if we, in fact, we go forward and are successful, are also immeasurable. How do you measure the benefit of freedom in Iraq? I guess if you're an Iraqi citizen, you can measure it by being able to express your mind and vote. How do you measure the consequence of taking a dictator out of power who has tried to invade Kuwait? Or somebody who may someday decide to lob a weapon of mass destruction on Israel? How would you weigh the cost of that? Those are immeasurable costs. And I weigh those very seriously. In terms of the dollar amount, we'll let you know here pretty soon. George Condon.
If I can follow on Steve's question on North Korea, do you believe it is essential for the security of the United States and its allies that North Korea be prevented from developing nuclear weapons? And are you in any way growing frustrated with the pace of diplomacy there?
I think it's an issue. Obviously, I'm concerned about North Korea developing nuclear weapons, not only for their own use, but for perhaps they might choose to proliferate them, sell them. They may end up in the hands of dictators, people who are not afraid of using weapons of mass destruction, people who try to impose their will on the world or blackmail free nations. Concerned about it. We're working hard to bring a diplomatic solution. And we made some progress. After all, the IAEA asked that the Security Council take up the North Korean issue, and it's now in the Security Council. Constantly talking with the Chinese and the Russians and the Japanese and the South Koreans. Colin Powell just went overseas and spent some time in China, went to the inauguration of President No in South Korea, and spent time in China. And we're working the issue hard, and I'm optimistic that we'll come up with a diplomatic solution. I certainly hope so. Rob.
Thank you, sir. Mr. President, millions of Americans can recall a time when leaders from both parties set this country on a mission of regime change in Vietnam. 50,000 Americans died. The regime is still there in Hanoi, and it hasn't harmed or threatened a single American in the 30 years since the war ended. What can you say tonight, sir, to the sons and the daughters of the Americans who served in Vietnam to assure them that you will not lead this country down a similar path in Iraq?
That's a great question. Our mission is clear in Iraq. Should we have to go in, our mission is very clear. Disarmament. And in order to disarm, it will mean regime change. I'm confident we'll be able to achieve that objective in a way that minimizes the loss of life. No doubt there's risks with any military operation. I know that. But it's very clear what we intend to do. And our mission won't change. Our mission's precisely what I just stated. We have got a plan that will achieve that mission should we need to send forces in. Last question. Let's see who needs one. Yes, ma'am. Jean.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the coming days, The American people are going to hear a lot of debate about this British proposal of a possible deadline being added to the resolution or not. And I know you don't want to tip your hand. This is a great diplomatic moment. But from the administration's perspective and your own perspective, can you share for the American public what you view as the pros and cons associated with that proposal?
You're right. I'm not going to tip my hand.
But can you help them
sort out the debate? Anything that's debated must have a resolution to this issue. It makes no sense to allow this issue to continue on in the hopes that Saddam Hussein disarms. The whole purpose of the debate is for Saddam to disarm. We gave him a chance. As a matter of fact, we gave him 12 years of chances, but recently we gave him a chance starting last fall. And it said, last chance to disarm. The resolution said that. And had he chosen to do so, it'd be evident that he's disarmed. But yeah, so more time, more inspectors, more process, and our judgment is not going to affect the peace of the world. So whatever is resolved is going to have some finality to it so that Saddam Hussein will take us seriously. I want to remind you that it's his choice to make as to whether or not we go to war. It's Saddam's choice. He's the person that can make the choice of war and peace. Thus far, he's made the wrong choice. If we have to, for the sake of the security of the American people, for the sake of peace in the world, and for freedom to the Iraqi people, we will disarm Saddam Hussein. And by we, it's more than America. A lot of nations will join us. Thank you for your questions. Good night.
President George Bush wrapping up a live press conference in the East Room of the White House. You hear the click of cameras there, a large gathering of reporters to hear the president hold forth for almost an hour, a brief prepared statement, and then a dozen or more questions from reporters in the East Room. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm joined tonight to consider the president's remarks by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly magazine, joining us from Hanover, New Hampshire. Good evening, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
And from New York, joined by James Pinkerton, a columnist at Newsday.com and a former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, the sitting president's father. Good evening and welcome, James Pinkerton.
Thank you.
Thank you both for joining us. We heard the president say tonight that Iraq continues to engage in what he called a willful charade, defying U.N. weapons inspectors refusing to disarm as required by the U.N. Security Council, saying that the security of the United States depends on that disarmament and that he will lead it, saying that he still has some hope and a short amount of time that he's willing to put into diplomacy, but that he's prepared clearly in his remarks to take the next step to military action if that does not bear fruit. And it sounded to me, Jack Beatty, as though next week is really the end of the rope here. He said beyond next week, well, we'll see. But it sounded as though it's one more week that the president is laying out there for the United Nations, for Saddam Hussein, for something other than war.
Yes. And, you know, I was really struck here that the president, I don't think, has stepped up to the moment here. He didn't do his job as educator. Again and again, the questions were, please think through for us the costs, what might happen if this or that. Go through the arguments. Help us sort of get used to the idea that this is a necessity. Instead, he merely asserted that it was. The president didn't bring us into his thinking. He didn't give us any of this. In fact, when someone said, how much will this cost? He says, well, we'll tell you in the supplemental. Oughtn't people know in advance? And I think he's setting himself up for some problems here, because unless he takes the people in now and tells them up front, the costs and all the other downsides are going to come as for many tragic and disheartening shock.
But James Pinkerton, the president was very clear in saying that he believes the cost of inaction would be greater, that he personally believes, he said, and the people around him believe that Iraq represents a serious threat to the security of the United States, a threat so serious that he's not willing to live with it, that the cost of inaction greater than the cost of action.
Right. He said that about seven or eight times. Mm-hmm. I agree with Jack that he didn't really give new information. All the rumors that he was going to announce the capture of Osama bin Laden, that he was going to announce the start of the war, you would think that they would have given him something to justify the press conference, some new argument, some new revelation, some new breakthrough in terms of a country shifting over. Instead, as the press conference began, he was sort of greeted, as it were, by the news that the Chinese have apparently signed on with the opposite coalition. What did strike me, however, was the degree to which, although he didn't really offer new information, he was very subdued, he was very quiet, and he was very, very conscious to avoid the sort of almost baiting of the United Nations that he's done in the past when he talked about they need backbone, they need spine, they need calcium. I think he was much more eager to see what he could do on sort of a Hail Mary basis about actually snagging some votes.
Though he did continue to say that this is a proving time for the United Nations Security Council. James Pinkerton, you've sat in the White House circle. This was clearly a deliberate press conference. It didn't happen by accident. The president's staff must believe that this is the message that will prepare at least the United States for whatever he intends to do.
Well, or it was a press conference to prepare British and Spanish public opinion. I suspect that because he didn't really say that much that it was new, and I don't think he really needs to convince the American people. I think they're on board. All the polls show that. His problem is the world. And he did give about a 10-minute, well, effectively a speech. The opening statement, I thought, was long by these presidential white press conference standards. And actually, sometimes I've seen them where they don't have an opening statement at all. They just get up and say, okay, first question. So I think he's under a colossal pressure from the allies who they're the ones with, as opposed to America, they're the ones with 80 or 90% of their population against the war, and they need all the cover they can get.
One very keenly pointed remark right at the top, Jack Peaty, he said, all the world needs from Hans Blix is the answer to a single question, has Iraq fully and unconditionally disarmed? Will the president, will the world get that single answer from Hans Blix, UN Weapons Inspector Chief, tomorrow morning?
Well, even as I was watching, Mr. Bush, the trailer beneath the picture was saying, Hans Blix, remarkable progress or something like that from Iraq. He mentioned, he even used the word proactive the other day, which is the word in previous statements he had left out. So he's going to say there's been progress and they're being proactive, just the opposite of what Mr. Bush, in other words, setting up a conflict between the inspectors and Mr. Bush. And also, I think leaving, you know, this is what I mean when he's falling below the moment. He needed to talk to the British public. He needed to talk to the Spanish public. He needed to figure out some way to connect with them and to understand. We understand why you're nervous. We understand why this is going on. And here's what we're going to do about it. And he didn't, he couldn't do it somehow.
James Pinkerton, what next?
Well, I think Bush will give it the best shot he can in the UN, and then I think you're probably right when you opened up by saying a week from now the world will look a lot different.
James Pinkerton, former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and George Bush the Senior, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This has been a live press conference of the President of the United States. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.